The Holy Gospel according to St. Matthew, excuse me, the 14th chapter. Glory to you, O Lord. Immediately, Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead to the other side, while he dismissed the crowds. And after he had dismissed the crowds, he went up to the mountain by himself to pray. When evening came, he was there alone. But by this time, the boat, battered by the waves, was far from the land, for the wind was against them. And early in the morning, he came walking toward them on the sea. But when the disciples saw Jesus walking on the sea, they were terrified, saying, "It is a ghost!" And they cried out in fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them and said, "Take heart, it is I. Do not be afraid." Peter answered him, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." He said, "Come." So Peter got out of the boat, started walking on the water, and came toward Jesus. But when he noticed the strong wind, he became frightened and began to sink. And he cried out, "Lord, save me." Jesus immediately reached out his hand and caught him, saying to him, "You of little faith, why do you doubt?" When they got into the boat, the wind ceased, and those in the boat worshipped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." The Gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, O God.
As I come into this place, and to really acknowledge the fact that I know where I am, it was cold out there. The only other time that I've been this cold, and I've been in everywhere from Anchorage, Alaska, to many places in the world, but Prague, is that's one of the coldest places in the world because their heating standards are not like ours, you know. Over at the International Baptist Seminary, went there for an international staff meeting when I was still working as Associate General Secretary for American Baptist Churches, and it was so cold, and people were asking about having single rooms. And the next thing we know, we were always, "Can you want to sleep in my room with me?" We could have had one giant room and everybody cuddle. Good morning. It is a pleasure to be here with you today and to just be in church. At 81 years old, there have been very few Sundays in my life when I haven't been in church, a church, some church. And there is no better way to begin a week than to begin walking out in the sense of what worship gives to us. I'd just like for us to think for about an hour and a half. Don't think. I guess somebody at the back said, "Take him down now." It is a pleasure to be here this morning and to be in God's house. I see friends out here. I see brothers and I see sisters because that's who we are to be in Jesus Christ. I want to just briefly this morning, somebody at the back says, "Well, what does he mean by brief?" Brief for him may be 2 hours, but no, it won't. I want us just to think together in this season of remembering my lifelong friend and brother, Martin Luther King Jr., and the experience out of, we're not talking about him, but I'm setting us in the context of this weekend, that there is a special moment for us to pause and to say, why are we doing this? Why are we celebrating this person or that person? There are certain experiences that we all have that are in common. You know, if a fire burns, it'll burn each of us. If the weather blows cold, we all freeze. There are some things that, there are more things that we have alike than we have that are different. I want us just to think briefly about this encounter of Jesus that was read in the scripture of Jesus and the disciples on a night on the waters. The scripture tells us in Matthew's gospel that Jesus and his disciples were out at the end of a day. And at that point, they entered into an account of an event that happens that is relevant to us this morning. And I'd just like for us just to think, and you can remember this, I know. You know, we remember things by numbers. To think of the four experiences of life: conflict, challenge, defeat, and victory. In this one account of the encounter of Jesus and his disciples, that evening when they were out, the disciples were out on the boat at the lake. And there, all of a sudden, when it gets a little stormy and rocky, and you can imagine being on a lake somewhere, and it gets a little rocky out, and everything may calm down. But in the midst of that, you look out, and you see a figure, a human figure, walking on the water toward you. And I ask you to use your imagination like the children do. And as they are there in the calm, the resting of the evening, conflict comes into their lives. Can you imagine how you would feel if you're trying to rest and relaxing and talking, and all of a sudden you look up and you see a character walking along the water? Now that's conflict, because it conflicts with everything that you are accustomed to, that your mind tells you that ought to be. And that is one of the first experiences that we all have in common. Conflict arises for every one of us. Now whether you're going to be, whether it begins at your birth and ends at your death, all of us will experience conflict. We talk about in our times so much of many of the differences that we have. But what about the things that make us alike? Why are we looking for differences? Why does it matter whether this person wears this shoe size and that one wears that size? This one has short hair, that one has long hair. Does that define who the person is? Are we just physical objects to be observed? But conflict comes into each of our lives. And you know, I think sometimes when your life is going well and everything might be fine and everything is moving along, your job is going well, and you said, now I'm well on the way to becoming what I work toward my end goals. And there in that moment, all of a sudden, you look on your desk or wherever you are, and the word comes to you that because of a lack of funding or for whatever the reasons, unsatisfactory service to that person who is in charge, that you are being terminated as of such and such a date. Now that's conflict, isn't it? The mortgage has to be paid. The electric bill has to be paid. All of us at some times know conflict, where something comes up and it's negative for us. It interferes with the course we're on, and it means that this is one thing, and no matter how long we live, we all know conflict. So that first common experience of life that we all share is the feeling and the experience of the pain of conflict. Now, the disciples are there, and their evening is conflicted when they see a figure walking on the water, and as it comes closer, they can see the figure, and he assures them, don't be afraid. It is I. This is Jesus. You don't have to be afraid. It's me. I'm with you. How many of us know what it is like to be in moments of conflict in our lives? And somehow, through maybe a smile, a kind act, or just something that comes up that assures you The person incident tries to assure you that this is all right, you know, but it'll be okay. Jesus comes walking to them in their lives. Now, we all have conflicts. The family is well, and all is well. You leave home in the morning, you go to work and to school or to wherever you gather, and you get a call that a mother is dead. Father died, a child is missing. All over, we share the same kind of moments, because that is a moment of conflict. When life is tossed up and the smooth road which we are taking is somehow conflicted with problems and cares that we did not look for, nor do we want to have. But every one of us will know. Every one of us cannot escape the entrance of conflict in our lives. And the challenge then is to look out to those sources. And we as Christians are challenged to look to Jesus Christ as the answer to our conflicts. When Jesus comes walking to the water on them and he says, don't be afraid, it is I. How many of us have known the presence of those moments in our lives when something reassured us and we heard the voice of Jesus Christ or the presence seen in each other, some of our family members or our friends, and we received the assurance that it's going to be all right. As a boy growing up, in a public housing project in Grady Homes in Atlanta, Georgia, in segregated Atlanta, Georgia, when we could not go, if there had been a McDonald's, we couldn't have gone to the McDonald's. If we had to go to the relieve ourselves, we could not use the restrooms. If we wanted to drink from a water fountain, it was marked white or colored. When you wanted to ride the bus, you had to go and sit on the back of the bus. And if someone wanted your seat of the white race, well, then you got up and you gave them their seat, or you might have been arrested, or other things happened to you. Conflict and challenge. When you are trying, we are trying to live our lives, we somehow create our own challenges. And we allow those challenges to exist. How many of us can answer right now in the presence of God? Because God is always in our presence, whether we seek God's presence or not. God is always in our presence. How many of us have had moments in lives when we were and are guilty of pointing out the differences in each other rather than the things we have in common? Can you imagine Jesus marking the distinction, says, I don't want to, when I said, ask the people to stand who've been healed, not you people over there, but these people. Today we're only gonna deal with Asian people, or black people, or Hispanic people, or white people, or people from this country. Why is it that we have all come to the point where we have to look at our differences rather than those things that make us, that bring us together? So I'm saying all that to say, and I get back to this, when Jesus and his disciples are there, Jesus in the water, the disciples in the boat, those two common experiences are happening now for them. The disciples see that it's Jesus. And then that third conflict comes up. Third of the experiences comes up when Jesus assures them that it is I. Now, there's one in every group. Peter said, what does he say? Hey, that is Jesus. Lord, if that is really you, how often do we challenge God in our lives? How often we challenge Jesus? Lord, if you can do so and so, do this, if you can do. But he says, now, if that is really you, then allow me to walk on the water with you. Now, he's in the boat. with his fellow disciples. And he doesn't say, let us walk on the water with you. No, he says, let me. I'm the greatest of this movement now. Let me walk on the water with you. If that is really you, then let me walk on the water with you. First of all, there are two things that come up, and we are intelligent. We are not a dumb people. We are not living in a dumb age. We may act dumb sometimes, but we are not living. This is an enlightened age. It is probably the most enlightened age that humankind has known in terms of our knowledge. And when there are those moments comes up, and some of us, can you ever think of when you just felt that it ought to be you to do something as opposed to somebody else? Little children do that. This is my ball. Why did you give it to her or to him? As a boy growing up in a house with two other brothers, I was the oldest by 3 years and 4 years. I was the oldest 3 and 4 years older than my two brothers. And it seemed like they were always together against me. And I used to find myself saying, it's not fair. Let me do so and so. And this is the way we are like children sometimes. You know, why did you let so and so do that? It ought to be me. Let me. And there are those moments when we forget about that. We are reminded every day. Now don't tune me out now. Every day, by turning on our televisions, sitting at our computers, going on the internet, listening to the radio, we hear the message of me. I am the greatest. Nothing has ever been like me. It's all about me. But don't you know, my brothers and sisters, we in the Christian church, the family of Jesus Christ, ought to be the first ones to say, no, that is not what it's about. God has called us to take stands, to speak out for our brothers and our sisters, to be concerned about the hungry people on the streets, the people who are treated different. Why do I have special privileges? God has created all of us with similar needs, but he has called us as a church to be Christ-like. When I was considering, and because of This Is King Weekend, I give one illustration. When I was considering ministry in my life, I thought of all of the obstacles and the things that were happening, and when it came to the point where I had to say, well, if I do this, what will happen to me? Then I knew that was the wrong reason for taking a stand. God has called all of us, each one in this place, and those who hear on the waves. God has called all of us as Christians to walk on this earth so that we may point out the nature of Jesus Christ. But here on that boat, Peter says, Lord, if that is really you, then let me walk on the water with you. Now that we come to that third of the experiences of life that is all common. And so Jesus said, give me your hand. And so you can imagine he was still kind of shaky, reaching over the boat. He didn't just jump out there. I can imagine he put one foot off the boat onto the into the water. One foot. And he finally ventured on out with the next one. And he said, hey, this is all right. And he probably just turned, finally said, I can do this on my own. I can turn Jesus' hand loose. And but he turned around. He had the thought of what he was doing, why he was so special. And he turned around and looked at those disciples in the boat. And he said, hey, do you guys see me? Look at me, I'm special. And what happened? Conflict, challenge, defeat. He went down in the water right away. He began to sink. And now, we all have those experiences where we know what is right. We know. We've been taught. As Christians, the Bible has taught us. Jesus has walked away to show us and to tell us how to do. But at sometimes we think we're so good, we can walk on out there. We don't need to worry about whether Jesus is holding our hands or not. Hey, look at me. I'm somebody. I'm the greatest thing you'll ever see. Nobody has done anything like me yet. And he began to sink. But what did he do? Now, he was no fool. You know, we know who controls the electricity in the building, the power company. And if you don't know, if you don't pay the bill, they turn off the electricity. So Peter was out there. He knew that he was doing something wrong when he went to sink. He didn't keep looking at them and say, "Hey, see me fall." No. He said, "Lord, save me." Right now, my brothers and my sisters, and this weekend, we are not followers of Jesus Christ to stand by and be void from the noise of helping to put our world in an upright position. We are called to be an example, all of us. We don't have to all do it in the same way, but we do it by the way we react to people. I can never believe in a God who is the creator of us all, who asks us to treat any group of people wrong. You know, I think I would be scared to death. I might close my eyes and I may not get up. Deep down in our hearts, I am convinced that we know what is right. But we allow others to come into our settings and into our lives because we want to be accepted. And then we find out that it's not that we don't know what's right. It's that we want to be accepted by our peers. And we are afraid to stand up on the water and to ask Jesus to guide us instead of sinking because we've gone the wrong way. Conflict, challenge, defeat. And then the one thing about Peter was not dumb now. And neither are we. He knew who to ask for help, didn't he? And he said, "Lord, save me." In our world today, we are all saying, "Lord, save me." Or those of us who haven't reached that point, we ought to be saying that. Because our salvation, the Bible teaches us, comes from Jesus Christ, our Savior. Conflict, challenge, defeat, and victory. Jesus immediately said, "I'll let you just struggle there and drown, go up, bob up and down the water." He immediately said, "Give me your hand." And he lifted him back to the shore. My brothers and my sisters, you. In this journey on earth, we will all have the same conclusion. We will all die from these bodies, and our spirits will go to where we believe Jesus Christ lives. Today and this weekend of the celebration and remembrance of Martin Luther King Jr., we don't remember Martin Luther King Jr. because he walked around and said, "Hey man, look at me, I'm bad." He didn't take out his gun and start firing. No. He gave his life. In Birmingham, I'm getting ready to close with this illustration. In Birmingham in 1963, I had the privilege of being in the A.G. Gaston Motel. the colored motel. You know, you couldn't use the same motels in Birmingham. And we were up on the second level, and what was called, we used to joke and say it was the suite. The suite was two beds joined together, separated by a water fountain, you know, a little water basin to wash your face, etc. And Eugene Bull Connor had issued, he was the sheriff, the reigning law official in Birmingham, and he had issued an edict to say that anybody who would participate in a scheduled march, a march of little children who were going to be out of school for Holy Weekend. We used to call it Holy Week, but now they call it Spring Break, you know. But it was Holy Week, you know, for Easter holidays and all. And so on that Friday, they were going to have a march. On Good Friday now, little children dressed in their little black or colored children, we used to call us colored then, the Negro children, and dressed in their Sunday school best. And they were going to march into the park right in the center of Birmingham. Bull Connor said, if you let them come, he said, I'm warning you, I'm going to have water hose, police dogs, and are we going to knock them down? And he meant that. They even had them show that. You know how a fire truck comes over the water and when they fire it, it'll knock anything down. And he threatened the little children, and the rest of you will be adults. I will not be responsible for the safety of anybody, women, children, anybody. And so we were up there in the motel upstairs in the suite, in the two beds separated by a face bowl. And as we were there, Ralph Abernathy at that time had just gone to Atlanta to become pastor of the West Hunter Street Baptist Church. And he said, now, you know, I always go to jail with you, and I always, you know, you're my friend and my brother, but I can't be arrested on this weekend. Who ever heard of a pastor, a new pastor in a church, missing church on Easter Sunday? And several others went around the room. Reverend Fred Shuttlesworth had just taken a new position and some other people. And so they were talking about why they couldn't go, they couldn't risk this. And so Dr. King Jr. Got up, took some water on his face, and wrote it down like this. And this one who's known him all my life since childhood. I did not know what to expect, but Reverend King Sr. and I looked, and we were just sitting there looking. We were sort of observers with King Jr.'s staff. And so when he looked up, he said, now, Ralph, I heard you when you said this, or Fred. He went around the room, and he repeated every reason that the persons had not to participate. And he said it. I know your reasoning, but I've got to go because I gave my word. How many of us today are giving our word? We promised Jesus Christ that we were going to stand for that which was right from heart to heart, that we were going to treat each other like children of God, etc. How many of us have promised that? But yet, we have come up with excuses as to why we won't. This weekend reminds us that all of us live a life in common in terms of Jesus Christ. Conflict, challenge, defeat, and victory go out from this place using those three situations to question yourselves to see where we fit in. And so we all share our commonalities in Jesus Christ, not our differences. God bless you.